Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Prishubhana Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vantakapa Tuvyascha Kripa Sinuvyevacha Patidanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Chadvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Nana Shastra Vicharinaika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajanam Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuyago Shri Viva Gopalago. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Shri Sanatana Goswami, Shri Rupa Goswami, Shri Raghunath Bhat Goswami, Shri Raghunath Das Goswami, Shri Jiva Goswami, and Shri Gopala Bhat Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and engaged in the transcendent loving service of Radha and Krishna. Now we're reading from the seventh chapter of the Nectar of Devotion, Evidence Regarding Devotional Principles. So Sri Rupa Goswami has given us 64 principles as the guiding principles of performing devotional service. And now he'll go over these principles in some detail, beginning with Adau Guru Ashraya. That the first principle is accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The 11th canto, so I'm going to read Prabhupada's what he says here. Say a little bit about it. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd chapter, verse 21, Prabuddha tells Maharaj Nimi, my dear king, know for certain that in the material world there is no happiness. It is simply a mistake to think that there is happiness here, because this place is full of nothing but miserable conditions. Any person who is seriously desirous of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments, and thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, living aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. Everyone should try to find out a bona fide spiritual master in order to fulfill his mission of life, which is to transfer himself to the plane of spiritual bliss. The purport is that one should not accept as a spiritual master someone who is full number one, who has no direction according to the scriptural injunctions, whose character is doubtful, and who does not follow the principles of devotional service, or does not conquer the influence of the six sense gratifying agents. The six agents of sense gratification are the tongue, the genitals, the belly, anger, mind, and words. Anyone who has practiced controlling these six is permitted to take disciples all over the world. To accept such a spiritual master is the crucial point for advancement in spiritual life. One who is fortunate enough to come under the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master is sure to traverse the path of spiritual salvation without any doubt. So much has been said about this topic. and to say something new wouldn't be very appropriate. But here we can see that probably the main controversy within our society, the understanding of what is a bona fide spiritual master, because there are many different levels of understanding it. The most simple level of understanding it, as Prabhupada explains, is just like the basic qualification is that the spiritual master has to be like the post peon, Prabhupada would say. That the post peon, he delivers the letter to you without changing it. Someone writes you a letter, it's put into the post box, and they send it to you, and the postman's duty is simply to deliver it to you as he himself had received it. Not that he decides that he doesn't like the envelope and he opens up the letter and he doesn't like the content, so he changes a few things for your benefit. Then you receive the letter and you get a new letter. And his only business is to deliver it as he received it. Similarly, the knowledge coming down from Krishna is perfect. And any addition or subtraction will make it imperfect. Another level, or on a similar level, Prabhupada said, a bona fide member, bona fide representative of a company is one who canvasses on behalf of the company. That is, he sells the company's product. He doesn't sell his own product. If he starts selling his own product instead of the company's product, then he's not really a bona fide representative of the company. Or if he sells the company's product, but he keeps all the money for himself, the company won't appreciate it. Now, on another level, of course, Prabhupada said one should not accept a spiritual master, someone who is fool number one. That sounds like good advice. Maybe he's fool number two or three. But at least not fool number one. And there's no direction according to the scriptural injunctions. In other words, one has to understand what the scriptures say. If we look at, we review Prabhupada's classes, we can see that Prabhupada, everything he said was everything he said was backed up by scripture. He may not have always directly quoted scripture, but everything he said we could find somewhere within scripture. And the directions he gave to others, he also gave according to scripture. And whose character is doubtful. So character, of course, means basic principles like honesty and morality, etc. So it is not that I become a spiritual master, I become transcendental, and therefore it doesn't really matter what I do. That everything is lila. Sometimes devotees think like that. It's because in other words, the basic idea is not because I'm a guru, therefore whatever I do is right. The basic principle is because whatever I do is right, therefore I'm a guru. Therefore the character can't be doubtful who does not follow the principles of devotional service. These are quite obvious. And it was not conquered the influence of the six sense gratifying agents. So this is, of course, this is a higher level than the basic. Just like, for instance, one may have a certain position. There are so many positions in the material world, like that of a president. But there's a history of presidents, and not every president of the United States, for instance, was equally qualified, or will be equally qualified in the future. But they're all bona fide presidents. Similarly, there may be different levels of how one may be bona fide, but that doesn't mean that just because one is bona fide, one is equally qualified. But here it says that with all these qualifications, to accept such a spiritual master is a crucial point for advancement in spiritual life. In other words, if we want to advance in spiritual life, we have to find someone who's more qualified than we are. If someone is on the same level as we are, or on a lower level than we are, then it would be hard to advance. So here, the first principle is that there's no happiness in the material world. But if one wants real happiness, one has to come to the spiritual platform. So we have to learn how to come to the spiritual platform. First of all, we have to learn how to come to the mental platform. The mental platform is the platform of actually ritual morality, actually, the mental platform. The central platform is this anamaya. Anamaya means that just trying to eat, devour things, absorb them. The most basic animal level of existence. So it's not that we're necessarily completely free from that. And then there's the pranamaya platform where we just try and survive. We recognize other living entities are alive and we think we're a good person because we don't, you know, step on every insect we see. So that's the pranamaya platform. We recognize this life is not simply to absorb it, to eat it, but we can also acknowledge my own life and the life of others. But the manamaya platform means that there is some understanding that there has to be some regulation in our activities. The Vedic literature primarily aims at gradually regulating sense enjoyment. There are rules and regulations. For those in the mode of ignorance, then there is some regulation that if you want to eat goats, then you can eat a goat once a month on the full moon night, or actually the dark moon night. That means the new moon night, and whisper a mantra in the ear that now I'm cutting your throat, and in the future you'll be able to cut my throat. So this is regulation, some kind of morality, some kind of regulation. Because that's for the mode of ignorance, there are regulations for people in the mode of passion, there are regulations for those in the mode of goodness, and the underlying principle is to restrict sense enjoyment. To gradually restrict lording it over the material nature. Then, one can come to the platform of from the manamaya platform to the intellectual platform. So the intellectual platform means aham brahmasmi, that I'm not this body, vijnana. That on that platform, the jnana condescension, rather than the karma condescension, and one tries to understand the distinction between the self and the other things, the mind, the senses, etc. So that's the platform of discrimination. And then beyond that is the anandamaya platform, where one is on the spiritual platform of Krishna consciousness. So of course, we can try to come to the anandamaya platform, but it's not so easy. If we're basically on the karmakanda or jnanakanda or those platforms, it's very difficult to jump immediately or consistently to be on the platform of anandamaya vyasa. So does that mean that the process doesn't work? For instance, we're not really following karmakanda. We're not following jnanakanda. We're not following astanga yoga. We're following bhakti yoga. But does that mean just because I follow bhakti yoga, therefore I'm on the most elevated platform of devotional service? No, there's karma mishra bhakti, there's jnana mishra bhakti. There's other kinds of mixed bhakti also. So does that mean that I should give up mixed bhakti? Yes, we should. But first we have to learn what bhakti is. Then we can find out what unmixed, unalloyed bhakti. It's not so easy. It's not simply a question of, you know, looking in my pocket, seeing what the mixture is, and taking it out and throwing it away, and now I'm a pure devotee. It means that there are many things to learn and many things to unlearn. that there are many anarthas that we have that we've been practicing since time immemorial. So we have to find out how to unlearn those habits, and at the same time, we have to learn how to develop the process of devotional service, of bhakti, how to actually focus the mind upon Krishna and give our love to Him. Of course, if we simply try to reject material conceptions of life, then we wouldn't get very far, because we wouldn't know what to do. On the other hand, we try to take up a spiritual conception of life. And by doing that, gradually we recognize what material conceptions of life I'm supposed to reject. Therefore, although there may be karma mishra bhakti, karma mishra bhakti means that one knows that the goal is Krishna, but one is addicted to the fruits of his activity. So that addiction to the fruits of activity is not only that I need a paycheck at the end of the week, or that I have to, you know, I do so much service, I have to give so much in return. There is also the subtle profit, adoration, distinction. There are many different fruits that come from any action we perform. Every action we perform will result in some kind of result, good or bad. But when one becomes addicted to the result, enjoying the result of his work, that's called karma mishra bhakti. Although one is, he knows, or she knows, that the goal is Krishna. That certainly, we would like to get free from these things, but first of all, we have to recognize what they are, and we have to come to another platform of understanding so that these things are not so attractive. Because that means jnana mishra bhakti. In other words, higher than karma mishra bhakti is jnana mishra bhakti. One knows the goal is Krishna, but one takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna. So that's recommended over karma mishra bhakti. That's why we have our, that's one of the reasons why we have our classes and discussions and things like that, because what we discuss are principles by which, when we understand them, then we can understand the futility of trying to lead, get it, of advancing materially in the material world, and we can understand the desirability of coming to a platform where we become conscious of Krishna. And then, by using our intelligence to become conscious of Krishna, rather than using our intelligence to try to arrange the material, to desire to arrange the material world for our material comfort or to avoid material problems, then the result is that when we become conscious of Krishna, then it doesn't really matter whether we're in a good position or a bad position. It's all the same for a person on the spiritual level. That spiritual level, of course, is explained by Lord Shiva to Parvati, Narayana Parasarve Kutaschana Bhivyati Swarga Apavarga Narakeshu Api Tulyarta Darshanaha. That a person just like Chitraketu, who is constantly absorbed in thinking of Krishna, who is on the spiritual platform, for him, the heavenly planets or the liberation or the hellish planets are all the same, because his actual experience was that of the spiritual experience on the spiritual platform. But for one who's not on the spiritual platform, one who's on a lower platform, it can't be said that everything they experience is the same. That would be imitation. Instead, one should strive to go from one platform to the next. If we see that we're on the material platform, then we should try to come to a platform of understanding ourselves as a spiritual soul. In other words, instead of trying to read about jumping to the spiritual activities of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, we should spend more time trying to understand how to become free from our anarthas and how to become, understand Krishna as he actually is, so that we can reciprocate with him in a practical way during the day according to our ability. Unless we understand what level we're on now, that we won't know what is our possibility to advance to the next level. Therefore, if we think, well, I'm in this level, let me try and get to a really higher level all of a sudden. And if we're not qualified, then we'll find ourselves, we won't be able to get to that really higher level. Or we may artificially think, by some activity, I've come to a really higher level. But if we really don't come to that level, it's just within our imagination. The result is ultimately we become disappointed because we won't be able to keep up that particular show. The spiritual advancement is supposed to be gradual, that's called patience. So of course in this age, patience is not a very common quality that people have developed, or because it's the generation where everything has to come immediately. And it's as people lose their gravity, as they lose their spiritual understanding, as they lose their spiritual intelligence, then people become more and more impatient. Everything has to be faster and faster. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's fast, it's considered to be good. That, you know, if a computer game goes really fast, then it's considered to be a good game. It doesn't matter what nonsense it is. Or on television, now the commercial can only last 10 seconds because that's the attention span most people have, around 10 seconds. Therefore, because people are not very patient, therefore it's very hard to understand a process that's gradual. It just doesn't make sense to most people in this age, a gradual process. So they think there must be a shortcut. There must be some way of, you know, hacking the spiritual world, the entrance. There's so many gates there. There must be some way of jumping over a few of them in the entrance by Kunta, or bribing the guard or something. But it's a gradual process, and gradual means we have to take to the process in order to gradually advance. If we think that it's a gradual process, so I just exist and then gradually advance. Or if it's a gradual process, then it's unfair that I got to follow so strictly just to gradually advance. It seems torturous. You know, maybe there's a way of not following the process and also gradually advancing. Because if one doesn't follow the process, then one will very quickly degrade oneself or fall back to where we were before. The only thing we can hope for is by following the process strictly, then we can gradually advance. And advance from what? We have to advance from, first of all, finding out what human life is. Human life in the sense of we've been trained up in the material world to think that unrestricted sense gratification is not bad. We think it's not a bad thing. It's just a normal thing. It's what the animals do, and we're not so different from the animals. We've been trained up in this, you know, in a certain conception of life. And although we may not admit it, because that's more or less the background we come from. It's not the highest culture that ever existed, believe it or not. Although that's what we've been told, that Western society especially is the apex of culture. It's the highest development in human civilization. And although when we come to the Krishna consciousness movement, where we don't believe it 100%, there's some doubts about it, but we don't completely disbelieve it or not either. Otherwise, if everyone actually disbelieved it, then we wouldn't have any devotees leaving. But because we've been trained up like that, and because we haven't really understood what culture is, therefore, we have a certain faith in the previous system. And the previous system is unrestricted sense gratification, and becoming more and more unrestricted. In a culture where, I don't know the exact figures, that there's something like $40 billion in America spent every year on hardcore pornography. It's obviously not the most cultured society in the world. although it's a leading society. It's more money spent on that than on all the other sources of entertainment. And I'm sure it's the culture in Holland, and it's not exactly, or Belgium, it's not exactly much better than that. Well, it's hard to say which is worse nowadays. Therefore, from such a culture, first of all, we have to come to the human level, the Manomaya platform, where we actually think that these things aren't so good, that I actually have to control my senses. We have to become convinced like that. Not, as I said before, that it would be better that the Hare Krishna movement only followed 4 regular principles, the devotees, no meat or fish or eggs. Then it would be a lot easier to follow the process. But there are actually 4 regular principles, and the 4 regular principles will actually help us come to the human form of life. Not that simply because we have 2 legs, therefore we're a human being. But we can actually, by following the process, we can actually come to a human form of culture, a consciousness. And then from there, we can begin to understand what is the actual difference between myself and the body. It becomes more apparent that actually I'm a spiritual soul, and that I have spiritual qualities, and I have a different goal in life. And then from there, one can actually come to the platform gradually of focusing one's mind upon Krishna. That it's not just, you know, a nice thing to do once in a while to remember what we're doing here, but actually it becomes one's actual life to think about Krishna. And then as one is able to focus one's mind upon Krishna, and then actually one begins to understand what spiritual life is. To understand that this material world is a miserable place, it is not so easy. We think, yes, it's a miserable place when I don't get what I want. And as soon as I get what I want, it's not so bad. But here it says, there's nothing but a miserable place. Therefore, one has to seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. So, of course, what does the initiation mean? What does diksha mean? Divya gandito dadyat kordyat prapasya sangshaya. So this is a very well explained point within our society, but not that we have understood it yet, although we are trying to explain it very clearly. But it's not so easy to understand. In other words, there's a process by which transcendental knowledge is delivered. Any knowledge, but especially transcendental knowledge, has to be based upon the principles of submissive hearing, inquiry, and service. That if one of those elements is missing, then the whole thing doesn't work. That unless we're able to hear submissively, and unless we understood what we've heard, and unless we apply it in the right way, then there's no result. Or if we do get a result, then it's only a very partial result. Or we should say, in proportion to our submissive hearing, in proportion to our understanding, and in proportion of our practical application, then the result comes. And of course, if we don't have faith in what we're hearing, then there's no question of trying to figure out what we heard. And if we haven't tried to figure out what we've heard, there's no question of practically applying it. So the first thing we have to do is recognize that there is a need to be submissive. There's a need to hear, first of all. And then there's a need to be submissive. Hearing, because we can't hear unless we're submissive. And we can't hear submissively unless we actually think that it's worthy to try to understand what we're hearing. And we won't try to understand what we're hearing unless we think it's worthwhile to try and put it into practice. So that's what initiation means, is that there has to be some acknowledgement that there's a process, and part of the process is surrender. Of course, surrender doesn't mean, you know, we've been trained up with this understanding of what surrender means. Don't surrender to a man or a woman. Of course, everyone surrenders to men and women. But don't, the idea is, although everyone surrendered to their wife, their husband, or whatever else they're surrendered to, but you're not supposed to think you're surrendered. You're supposed to think you're the boss. Although everyone knows that they're not the boss. Anyhow, you're supposed to think you're the king of the family, or the emperor, what is it, a king or emperor? Of the house, the head of the house. We're supposed to think that we're, you know, the head of the house, or, but actually everyone is simply a servant. So everyone has to take shelter of someone, because that's what the position of servant is. What the only question is what we think is our ashraya. So in taking shelter of Krishna, it is not that we accept initiation and then suddenly we're surrendered. That I sat at the fire sacrifice, it was the most surrendered thing I could ever imagine. Next to cutting my hair. After I did that, I knew I was a pure devotee, but to confirm it, then I sat at this fire sacrifice and threw some brains in, and I knew my life was perfect after that. No, Sharanagati means anukulyasya sankalpa. But first of all, sankalpa, anukulyasya sankalpa, one should accept everything favorable. Not just a few things favorable, but everything favorable. So that takes some practice. First of all, to find out what's favorable and to accept it. A lot of times when I'm giving class, if I start mentioning, or the next thing is reject. Pratikulyasya. Varya. Anukulyasya sankalpe pratikulyasya varjana. To reject everything which is unfavorable. So a lot of times sometimes I give class and I bring up a point that someone doesn't like and they immediately fall asleep. There's like this defense mechanism. It says, beep beep, you're about to hear something you don't like. Well, what should I do? Well, close your eyes and relax. It worked. Didn't hear a thing. So Maya will help us avoid hearing what we don't want to hear. But the next thing is to reject what we don't like. So that seems like, wow, that's really difficult. There's a lot of things we don't like. We don't want to give up. Many things we want have to accept. We don't really want to accept, so we don't accept them. You know, only eat with your right hand. Well, that sounds simpler enough. Or only wash your hands before you eat. I mean, I know a lot of times I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, everyone else is about to take prasadam, and it seems so long to, you know, the place where you gotta, such a long distance to the place you gotta wash your hands, and everyone seems to be quite happy here, and they didn't wash their hands either. Why do I have to get up and wash my hands, you know? They look at them like, they look clean. And then you got to say the prayer before you eat. Why do you got to say the prayer? You know, you're up there, I'm down here, just let you eat. So all these things they seem quite obvious, but sometimes they're not so obvious. And of course all of them are so we can always remember Krishna and never forget him. So if we're not always remembering Krishna, if Krishna's form is not always, you know, within our consciousness, and we're not always seeing Krishna displaying his Vrindavan Leelas in our heart, if we're not, you know, experiencing great transcendental ecstasy at every moment, then it's, you know, we actually still not completely surrendered. Although he did cut our hair, and he did whatever else we may have done so far. But we haven't gotten the full result of being surrendered. Therefore, initiation is a helpful process. It's not simply a formality. And it's not simply because I'm initiated, therefore I'm perfect, or the person who gave me initiation is necessarily perfect either. But it's a process by which we can become perfect by hearing perfect information. In other words, even Srila Prabhupada, he never claimed that he was perfect. And it wasn't simply... the only person that can actually claim that they're perfect, in one sense, is Krishna. That Krishna is actually free from the four defects of conditioned life. Imperfect senses, being subjected to illusion at times, committing mistakes, and the tendency to cheat. So of course, one shouldn't cheat. But the other defects, only Krishna can, we can say Krishna is apurusheya. He's beyond the four material defects. Only Krishna can have perfect senses and see everything exactly as it is. Only Krishna is completely beyond illusion. Therefore, one is perfect if one gives perfect information, if one gives perfect direction. That's the perfection. And if one receives the perfect direction and tries to apply it, that's one's own perfection. That's how one comes to perfection. And that means the four different levels, six different levels, accepting things that are favorable, rejecting things unfavorable, believing that Krishna will actually maintain one, that Krishna will protect them, rakshasi, or first protection. Protection, especially in the spiritual platform, that we can be protected from fall down by taking shelter of Krishna's instructions and through the disciplic succession, maintain ourselves on the platform of Krishna consciousness, and then to actually have no interest outside of Krishna's interest. So this takes a certain amount of purification to actually find out how much interest we have in things outside of Krishna's interest. We may take it for granted that because of my devotional service I have no interest outside of Krishna's. But then when we become purified at that level, then we see how many interests I actually have outside of Krishna's interest. And then the last thing is to always feel oneself meek and humble. So these levels of surrender are not so easy, nor can they be imitated. They have to be gradually achieved, especially by the first two. Accepting things which are favorable, giving up things that are unfavorable, and actually coming to the platform believing that Krishna will actually protect me on all different levels, but especially the spiritual level. And that's the process of surrender. So initiation means to take to the process of surrender. Not that I do what I like. That as long as we have that attitude, of course, where is the question of surrender? I read the books, and whatever I like, I take out of the book. Of course, one will make some spiritual advancement by doing that. It's not that there's no advancement before initiation. One can read the books and do what he wants. And that will certainly help one advance. But advance to what? Advance the level when one realizes that if I actually want to make more advancement, then I have to not do just what I want, I have to find out what Krishna wants me to do. And that if Krishna wants me to do something, and I don't want to do it, then still I have to do it anyhow. So does that mean that only the person who gave me initiation? No, initiation, we're being initiated, especially in our society, we're being initiated into a society. Therefore, one morning walk, Prabhupada explained that when he was asked, how do you have so many disciples, Sri Prabhupada, how do they know if they're pleasing to you? If they're, what they're doing is actually pleasing you. The Prabhupada's response was, well, we have our GBC, we have our temple presidents, there are so many authorities within the society. You follow their directions, and you'll, that's what it means to be pleasing. So not that, you know, I've taken shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, And therefore, you know, I have to find out from him always, or her, exactly what to do to be, you know, to be bona fide myself. No, if we, I was probably had many thousands of like that. That he gave authority to his temple presidents, his BBC, other authorities of the society, and he expected the devotees to follow them. And there was a conflict. Bhakti always, Prabhupada always supported the authority, not blindly. Not the authorities said, you know, something which was against the principles, but if the authorities were saying something which was in the principles of Krishna consciousness, then Prabhupada supported them, although they were imperfect. That famous incident in Hawaii, Prabhupada had one meeting with some disciples of his who were disturbed over the activities of their GBC. And they came to Prabhupada and they said, Srila Prabhupada, we can follow you, but we can't follow the GBC. Prabhupada said, my direction is you should follow the GBC. And they said, well, you don't seem to understand Prabhupada. We're surrendered to you, but we just can't be surrendered to this GBC, to the GBC representative. So Prabhupada said, well, my direction is you follow the GBC. And they repeated the same thing again. So three times you're out in American baseball and Vaishnava etiquette too. So they repeated the same thing, and Prabhupada slammed his fist against the table and said, hypocrites. He said, get out of here. So, Prabhupada was not, you know, this is a principle. That although we may not like the principle sometimes, but that's the principle of surrender. And not only that, to accept things favorable, but also give up things which are not favorable. That if we want to make spiritual advancement, then we have to become dutiful. So here it says, the qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation, argument, and thus able to convince others of these conclusions. So there are many, many principles all to help us come to the platform of becoming actually conscious of Krishna, all the way up to the platform where Krishna comes personally before us and reveals himself, as those who have read Madhuri Kandambini and realize Krishna with one's transcendental senses. But there are many, many different principles we have to understand and follow, understand, accept, and follow. And therefore, that's the whole business of those who are spiritual authorities, to explain what those principles are in a clear and understandable way so they can be easily as possible for us to follow them in order to convince others. In one sense, it's not very difficult. Always remember Krishna, never forget him, but just try it out during the day. See how long we can always remember Krishna and never forget him. Try it out for 15 minutes. Try it out during japa. So it's not so easy. It takes extensive amount of training. So after 10, 15, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, we haven't come to the perfection. We think, how is it possible? Then we should realize how exalted is the higher platforms of devotional service and just how much we actually have to learn. As soon as we think, you know, we've understood what's going on. We've understood the philosophy. I read Bhagavad Gita. I've understood that. I read, you know, Nectar of Devotion. I've understood that. You know, I've understood so many things. Then we're not going to make very much progress. If we think we've understood at our level, the best thing to do is to figure out how much have I understood that I'm not my body? What is my actual experience of that? How much have I understood how to live on the spiritual platform? How much have I understood what the spiritual platform is? Therefore, if we go over this, such great personalities have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead leaving aside all material considerations, are to be considered as bona fide spiritual masters. So, in our society, we say the Prophet is such a bona fide spiritual master, and we try to follow him. Because the Prophet, obviously, more than anyone else that we know of in history, left aside all material considerations. Anyone who had come to the Western world at the age of 70 to start a spiritual movement must have, you know, left aside a few material considerations. And that didn't fly in on a jet plane, you know, with, you know, a big reception. And no, you came on a freighter. How many of us would go to India on a freighter? On the Jaladuta. I never heard of any devotee doing that, have you? No? Why not? They gave up. Anyhow, how many people would go to the Western world at the age of 70 with no money, no one, perhaps knew no one, you know, just a pair of cartels and some books to start a worldwide movement? Obviously, Prabhupada was sincere. And when he was in the Western world, what did he do? He didn't try and figure out a new way of spreading Krishna consciousness, thinking, well, this is outdated. No, he sat down in a park and chanted Hare Krishna. He didn't compromise. He wore a dhoti and tilak, and he got others to wear dhotis and tilak. Gradually, he developed a movement, but in a bona fide way. Therefore, those who are giving up material considerations in this age are those who are following Prabhupada. So someone who repeats the same thing as Prabhupada, someone who follows Prabhupada's process, someone as much as we've understood it, the importance of things like book distribution, the importance of the morning program, the importance of repeating the message as it is, so many different importance that Prabhupada laid or stressed, the importance of a cultural revolution, how everything is connected to its preaching, to its satisfying Lord Chaitanya and his movement. Those who understood Prabhupada's principles, then they're as close as we can to Prabhupada's representatives. Of course, we can approach Prabhupada directly through his teachings, but certainly those who are more advanced than we are, they can help us understand his directions. So we think, well, you know, we have to find someone who's taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, and then go through this whole list here and think there must be someone like that. Well, I'd say the closest we're going to get to that is Srila Prabhupada, and the closest we're going to get to Prabhupada is how closely are those someone who's following Prabhupada, who's understood Prabhupada's mission and following it. Especially Prabhupada's understanding of working cooperatively to distribute transcendental literature and to spread Krishna consciousness. But that doesn't mean that everyone is going to be as exalted as explained here, or that every person who gives diksha is going to be so exalted. That's not possible. It's to be on Prabhupada's platform is not so easy. It's a gradual process. To actually be on the level, you know, on the highest levels of devotional service. In any case, we have to take shelter of someone, or else we're not going to get anywhere. And even if we don't take shelter of a devotee, it's guaranteed we're going to have to take shelter of someone, our mother, our wife, or someone, our pet dog. Somehow or another, we're going to have to take shelter of someone. So we might as well take shelter of the best person. Or else, you know, we don't know where we're going to go. Or maybe we do know where we're going, but may not be so recommended. Any questions about this? Yes. Minimum qualification. Anything can help. Because there are different qualifications for being a spiritual master. One of them is how strictly one is following the previous spiritual master. But the other thing is that one may follow very strictly, but still one has to be able to communicate. One has to develop relationships to be able to inspire others to do the same thing. As Sanatana Goswami told Haridas Thakura, that some devotees they follow very strictly, but they don't preach. And others preach very nicely, but they don't follow very strictly. But you're the best because you know not only follow strictly, but you're also preaching. So communication skills are helpful for preaching. Now, of course, we also have faith that to a certain extent communication skills will also be developed simply by purification of the heart. To be able to sing nicely or to, you know, have different skills, for instance, of counseling. These things will probably be, most likely be provided by the Lord in the heart if you come in contact with Him. I mean, there was one devotee who was famous for his learning counseling and preaching about it. And he said that the best example of counseling is Krishna counseling Arjuna on the Battle of Kurukshetra, before the Battle of Kurukshetra. So it is not that something new was invented called counseling that even God didn't know about. So we can look for it within our own examples of counseling and the skills that are necessary. So those will actually be provided by the super soul when we come in contact with him. Because after all, who gave these counselors the intelligence if it wasn't the super soul?
We need something else on
Something other. I mean, things may be helpful. Prabhupada didn't say that. You know, his books were the last books. So devotees will have realization. The problem is, when we accept mundane conceptions into these books, as if someone may realize something to help us explain Prabhupada's books, but if we think that there's some other conception other than Prabhupada's books, we put that in there to explain Prabhupada's books, then we won't understand Prabhupada's books. I'll give you an example. Just like here is a book written, The Ways of Devotion, on the nectar of devotion. So there may be some, because you know, the author himself says it's not the final book, and that there may be some defects in it. But he's gone through the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's gone through different things, and he's, you know, certain texts he's explained. Just like one thing in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada quotes the 11th canto, and Krishna is saying to Arjuna, to Uddhava, that the devotees accept saintly articles by me. I mean, he says many things, but among that. So he went back to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and it says Ganda. So the actual word is sense rather than saintly articles. So the devotee probably said sense, and the person translating or writing it probably didn't understand, so he thought it meant, you know, saintly articles, because the Prabhupada's accent and person is transcribing. So this book clarifies it, becomes easier to understand. He didn't, you know. So similarly, things like that can be helpful just to clarify. But instead of that, if, you know, someone writes a book and the Prabhupada's methodology is not applicable to this age, that we need something new, you know, we can't really rely upon ancient books anymore, like, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll give you an example. Like in the Bhagavatam, it says something about ladies. Now, of course, we may not understand what it says there. We may jump to conclusion and, you know, misinterpret it. But someone may say, well, we should just change it because it doesn't apply anymore. that men and women are different now. And we don't like what is said. Well, that's not acceptable. We may not understand what it says. We should try and understand what it says, but we can't change what it says because we don't like it. Anything else? Okay. Stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj, Nectar of Devotion, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Sura Premanande.